2715 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good afternoon. This is Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy. I hope you're having a great day. I'm going to give you an update on the weather forecast. We are streaming here on Talented People from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio station in Flemington, New Jersey. Basically, the detailed forecast is a slight chance of showers tonight after 10 p.m., increasing clouds with a low about 47. Chance of showers mainly after 9 a.m. on Thursday, cloudy with a high of near 65. Chance of showers continue mainly before 9 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 58 on Thursday night. Then showers with thunderstorms also possible after 3 p.m. with a high of 72 on Friday. And then Saturday showers and possibly a thunderstorm before 9 a.m., then a chance of showers with a high of 69. Saturday night, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of 49. And then on Sunday for Easter Sunday, it's a chance of showers, but partly sunny with a high near 63. So we're going to go to our one last quick break right now, and then we're going to enlighten you again on some of the interesting things that go on in the real estate attorney world with my guest, Melissa. We'll be right back.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened to it.
All right, so if you want to put your headphones on, audience, just all the noise out there today, consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right. Thanks again for watching us stream live here from Facebook, on Facebook about Talented People. I want to introduce you with a Flemington, New Jersey attorney. She's been across the state for many years. She's going to tell us about herself. Her name is Melissa Payer Makowitz. And she, is that right? I did well. Thanks. And she's with MJPM Law here on Main Street, Flemington. And I just want to welcome you to the show. Thanks for being here. So, okay, we're going to jump right in because yesterday you were talking about some of your expertise in the real estate attorney profession, which I'd love to share on Talented People. So first, tell us about yourself.
My name is Melissa Payer Makowitz. I've been a practicing attorney for approximately 10 years. I've been doing real estate most of that 10 years. I did a stint in insurance defense work. I've done a few other things with previous law firms, but my practice now is primarily real estate. I have an office in Bound Brook as well as in Flemington. I generally do about 300 to 400 transactions a year, which in the real estate world, that's quite a bit, I would think. And that's pretty much what I do. I mean, we've had some interesting things occur over the last 10 years in real estate. A lot of changes in lending practices and then just interesting situations that arise, so.
We want to hear all about it. I mean, really, like, I know that our viewers out there, people who are paying attention, if they're selling, if they're buying, it's always interesting to see your side of the table when it comes to your expertise in real estate and as an attorney. So you were talking about, okay, so you have been in, you've mentioned a quite different, like insurance. Start back with what you did a little stint in, and let's hear about how it got you to the real estate and the ownership of the business that you have.
In criminal justice, homeland security, or just about finished it. I stopped doing it.
Bring that a little closer to you.
Sure.
I just wanted you to be loud because it's amazing.
I got my master's in criminal justice, homeland security. I also was working on my PhD in criminal justice, homeland security, and had been practicing law at that point in time. And when I graduated in 2009, they didn't have, there was no openings in the criminal justice world. Everything was on kind of a hiring freeze at that point. I had some offers for state and federal positions, and unfortunately didn't pan out once the freeze hit. So I had worked doing collections work for a little while. That was awful. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. So I ended up I decided I was going to get a job, and I was going to figure out how to get a job. So I walked into a law firm, and I said, here's who I am. I'm looking for a job. And they're like, well, we're not hiring. And I ended up having met someone who was going to send me over with a book of business, which is strange, to say the least. They gave me a shot. I walked in, and I got myself a job.
Where was that?
In Branchburg at Peter Lau's office. So I walked in with a book of insurance defense business for Rider Insurance. And from there, once the real estate market picked back up again and the insurance defense stuff started dwindling down a little bit, I started to do the real estate, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Insurance defense work is tough. You're dealing with people's lives, people get hurt, and I don't think I have the heart for it, to be honest with you. And real estate was fun. It was a fun way to make a living. There was people, you were helping people, you were getting them to move on to the next phase of their life, whether they were selling because they were retiring and scaling down, or so I just enjoyed it and kind of ran with it from there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm Weikert Flemington here, and that's where we met, actually, because Melissa does work with our title agency and some of our associates at the Weikert office. So, yeah, there is something fun about it, right? Like the joy of a new homeowner.
First-time homebuyers are the best. They know nothing, and they are so excited. So excited to buy their house.
Oh, yeah. It's so great. So, okay. So let's talk about some of the things that happen that people should know about. First, let's start with sellers. Let me just check the time. It's 3:08. We're doing great. Okay. So, like, talk about some of the stories and behind-the-scenes information that you think that people need to know, especially because what happens is right after there's an offer and acceptance made, then it goes to you.
So once the offer and acceptance is made, in the state of New Jersey, the process is a little strange. What ends up happening is that the attorney steps in. They have a 3-day time period to begin attorney review. It's not that attorney review must take 3 days, which is a common misconception, but it must start within 3 days. And we step in and basically cancel the contract, which completely freaks everyone out. So we say it's acceptable with the following modifications. We cancel it first and then say it would be acceptable, I should say, with the following modifications, and then we make the modifications. And once everyone agrees to the new terms of the contract, that's the point in time where the person is officially under contract. So once it's under contract, then the time frame starts to really run. Because in attorney review, we change the time periods for the inspections. We change the time periods for the deposits. You name it, we do it. So the time periods generally now are 14 days. It used to be 10 days for inspections. So we'll do the attorney review, and then the inspection time period. We'll negotiate the inspections on behalf of our client. We get the deposits usually within 5 to 10 days after the conclusion of attorney review. And then we move towards ordering title, and we look to work on the closing at that point. So
when you talk about, let's talk just about traditional transactions first, because there's all these people out there who want to know about the bank-owned properties and how to go about working with an attorney on that. And the only reason I bring it up is because of the difference within the 10-day and the 14 days, because it's mostly, I think, a little bit more 14 days with the traditional seller and buyer, but the banks are pushing 10 days and everything up, but we'll get to that. So, okay, so what are some of the tips, like, so say you're representing the seller.
When I represent the seller, my primary thing is to tell them to be patient. It's a lot of waiting on the side of the seller. You get out of attorney review, and then you wait to get inspection reports. You wait to get the title reports. You wait. The other thing with sellers, especially if it's a seller who's been in a house for a really long time, it's a very emotional process. There are people who take, if you're working with a bank, for example, what you were saying is, it's a business transaction. They don't care. They don't care who they sell to. Doesn't matter. They don't care. If you're working with a seller who's been living in a house for 50 years and they look at it and they say, I brought my kids home to this house from the hospital and my grandkids came home to this house from the hospital and, they've lived in that house and every nook and cranny of that house is a memory. You might walk into that house and see a cracked tile and they look at a cracked tile and say, oh, that's when my kids were fighting and broke a lamp on the floor and it cracked the tile.
Aww.
It's a memory for them more than it's a cracked tile.
Right.
So it goes a lot deeper, and dealing in those transactions, it's very emotional, and you have to kind of really have a one-on-one attitude with them and understand that it is emotional, and it is going to be a change for them. It's a process. They're not going to come home to that house again after they sell it. So,
Yeah, I could just picture it. And you're right. And it's so opposite with the bank being a transaction. I was going like this because I laughed at some of my clients that are terrified of just having anything to do with a bank-owned property. But I said, it's really a lot easier because there isn't any emotion. It's absolutely a matter of kind of what's going on that day in the bank. You know what I mean? It's not like they're moving and they don't have a succession, like another house that they have to close on the same day. It's all open, you know? But yeah, you know much more than I do about that. So I was going to say, so yeah, it is very personal, and I can see exactly what you're saying about when someone actually has a broken tile and it comes back in the inspection report that this tile is going to require the whole floor to be replaced, that the seller's thinking of it as a time in their life that was something that they can attach themselves to.
And they're insulted.
And they're insulted, yeah.
By the fact that someone would bother asking for that.
Yeah.
And it becomes really emotional. It's a tough process.
And so what about the mediation of that? Does it end up being a credit, or how do they start like popping up tiles? What normally happens?
Usually it's a credit.
Yeah.
Sellers more often than not don't make repairs anymore. They offer a credit of some sort. And the reason that they do that is they're in the process of packing up their home, and they don't want people in and out trying to make repairs, trying to do things while they're packing and getting rid of things, and it's just too much.
So what she's also saying is just that at the closing of the house, when the house is transacted, then there's going to be a credit for whatever problem that's most common to offset whatever came through in the inspection report, hopefully, that they got together to figure out what to do, so it ends up being kind of like an allowance for the buyer to go fix it if they want to.
And that credit applies towards the closing costs and cannot exceed the amount of the closing costs, which becomes a problem. If there's $30,000 worth of problems, your closing costs are generally around $10,000, give or take. You can only get $10,000. So you have to then do a price reduction, which doesn't, I mean, if you take $20,000 off your purchase price, in the grand scheme of things, it's going to come out to equate to 50 cents a month or something over a 30-year loan. So it doesn't really put that money in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Good information. So talk about yesterday you were presenting, talking about the water systems and so on that's going in Hunterdon County, particularly in New Jersey.
So when you sell a house that has a well, the state of New Jersey requires, there's a well testing act, which requires the water be tested prior to closing. You're supposed to provide potable water, but someone could waive the ability to have potable water. So in other words, potable water would be passing water standards. So you can get poor quality well water, but the test must be performed. And it doesn't matter if, like you mentioned before, it's a bank-owned property where there's no electric, the water still must be tested.
And the bank pays for that?
Usually the bank puts it on the buyer.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand how they get away with that, by the way. Doesn't that seem just crazy that they can get away with that and nobody else can? It's just crazy. Yeah.
There's a whole other set of rules for the banks.
Yeah. Yeah. It. I guess... I don't even know if I would kind of fathom that, maybe because they really do own it, but then they should be responsible too. But blah, blah, we don't need...
Well, another thing that's really important to know, if you're purchasing a bank-owned property, bank-owned properties have a lot of towns, not all towns, a lot of towns have instituted fines if the house isn't being kept up. So the town pays for the house to be kept up so it's not an eyesore, and then those fines would attach to the property. But the only way you find out if those fines attached to the property is to do what's called an OPR request, which is an Open Public Records Act search. It does not attach to title, so the title search would not reveal that.
Why is that?
What they do is they put it on like tax liens is attached to title, but the way that they do it, it would be like a fine instituted by the town, and those don't attach to title either. If, for example, you put in a basement in the house and didn't get permits for it, and the town got wind of it and they fined you for it, that doesn't show up on title either. I had one. I told my clients to do the Open Public Records Act search because they are required to do that as part of their due diligence. My client, I guess they didn't do it, or they thought their agent did it, or whatever the situation was. But post-closing, I guess it was like 2 weeks after closing, I got a call from my client, frantic, that the town showed up at their door and said that there's a $350,000 lien on the property for unpaid fines. The house, by the way, cost them $325 to begin with, and they were absolutely freaking out.
Understandably.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
We ended up talking to the town, and I got it knocked down to a $200 fine, which was significantly better.
$200 from
$350? Yeah.
Oh, that is great.
I feel like they didn't expect the whole amount, but we did get it knocked down. It just ended up being a problem. I mean...
I remember kind of a similar situation. It was like, I'm not going to say who in my husband, that yet we were closing on our first house together, and there was a whole title search and everything went on, but it didn't show up somehow or another. It turned out that he had hit a street light in another town like 20 years when he was young and just 17 or something, and they had like a $25,000 fine on him, and it was accruing interest over every year, and our attorney told us to go down and talk to them, and they basically waived all the fees except for $100. That was the basic problem, and it was like waived and fixed right before closing. We were lucky.
But that comes up usually in the judgment search, yeah.
Wasn't even on there.
Yeah, the town fines don't show up.
And I mean, that must happen all the time.
In Somerset County, in a particular town, Somerset County, like Franklin Township, they are the worst with it. They just put it on there, and they figure it just becomes somebody's problem later, and they don't push it.
That is absolutely terrifying.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it also leads me to ask you about title insurance, because if you want to talk about that for a little bit, just because I don't think a lot of people know what it is, but if something is given a clear title and that's hanging there, it wouldn't the title insurance cover that? But I mean, so, that seems like a bad problem.
No, it doesn't, because it doesn't come back in title, not town fines. Title insurance covers title related issues, like tax liens would be title related issues. But because this doesn't run with the title, it runs with the house itself. Somehow the town gets away with it.
What about, is there a way to do a search on that on a property before you put an offer in?
You can do it's
public information. I have a client actually. I want to make sure, wink wink out there, that we get that done, because that's very interesting. So how do you spell it?
It's OPRA. It's Open Public Records Act.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So you do an OPRA on the property, and you'll get information whether there's permits for things, and it's really good to do it before you do your inspections, so you can compare what has been done to the house to what permits are on file.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps too, but also it'll show those fines, the neglected house fines, the permit fines, any kind of fines that are attached to the property.
Good. Checklist. Thank you. All right. So go ahead then. Tell us more about, from your perspective, things that you notice routinely in your office when a real estate transaction happens.
Survey is another thing that is incredibly important. A lot of people, I have conversations now, it's considered an optional fee. If you're buying a single family house or a multifamily house, anything other than a townhouse or a condo, you need to have a survey done, because the survey, the property boundary lines gets insured into your title policy, and if they insure it into your title policy, you have protection in case the information is incorrect. So your neighbor moves in next door, says they own 30 feet of your property, they're putting a fence in, what do you do? You hire an attorney, and it's all on you. If it's insured into the title binder, then the title company has to pay for that litigation to get you that property back or compensate you in some way. So that's a really important thing to do, to have the survey on the property and to make sure it's endorsed into title. And back to your point on title, so if you have a mortgage, you have no choice but to have a lender's policy on the property. But the lender's policy does not protect the person, and it protects the mortgage company. And you cannot make a claim against the lender's policy. The purpose of title insurance is to insure the title going backwards from the date of closing. So if there's any kind of judgments, any kind of liens, any kind of issues of any sort with the title, that title policy will protect it, but only if you get it. So the owner's policy, which is generally a couple $100s, it's penny-wise, dollar foolish to not get it. And with my clients, I really will not take a transaction where they refuse to get the owner's policy, because I don't want to see anyone really get jammed up later and take a position that I didn't represent them appropriately and explain the importance. So with the survey and with the owner's policy, I really do push it.
And so just to recap again about the water on responsibility normally of the seller, you were also saying that the potability test has to be done, the testing has to be done, but if it did fail, then a buyer could waive the right to have it fixed.
Correct.
If a buyer finds out that it fails and wants to have it fixed, and it goes back to you to figure out how to get to that.
Generally, in attorney review, we put it up, as a buyer, I put in a provision that says that has to seller agrees to that, then they are required to fix the water.
How much does it cost?
Depends on the system that has to go in. There are many things that it could fail for. I've seen really, really high-end, expensive fixes which have radon in the water were about $7,000. But generally speaking, it's about $1,500.
Yeah.
$1,500 to $2,000.
All right. Well, we're going to go to our first break right now. I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is Talented People. Thanks so much for watching in. I've got Melissa Payer Magowitz in the studio today. She's an attorney here in Flemington talking real estate, which you know I love. And we'll be right back. Thanks for watching.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, welcome back to Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you're looking forward to a nice holiday weekend. Happy Easter. And I also want to introduce you again to my guest. Her name is Melissa Payer Magowitz, and she's with the law firm here, MJPM Law in Flemington on Main Street. And we were talking about some of her observations as an expert and a realtor attorney on transactions in the Hunterdon County and across the state of New Jersey. So you were talking about, you wanted to add a little bit about bank-owned properties.
Yes, so bank-owned properties are an animal all their own, to be very honest. When it comes to bank-owned properties, the banks, although there's an attorney review period written into the contract, they don't really let us make any changes. So I tell my realtors to send over the contract before it's submitted. So if we need to try and write something in, we can. Otherwise, once it's signed and sent out, they say we do not allow any changes. That's the response, the standard response we get from the bank. So that's a problem in that a lot of bank-owned properties, if you do not close within the requisite time period in the contract by the contract closing date, you'll get hit with a per diem fee. You'll get a fine of $100 to $150 a day for every day you don't close. And they also reserve the right to cancel the contract. So you could be working on a contract straight through to the day of closing, and they'll pull it because you can't close on time. So making sure that you have enough time to close is so important. You can't just throw out a 45-day close on bank-owned property.
What do you think of as probably one of your worst bad transactions with a bank-owned property that went south?
We got we said we needed an additional week to close. The bank said no and canceled the contract. That was all right, I suppose. Then they rebid the property for a second time, and they accepted the bid. We got under contract, and once again, the mortgage company was not prepared to close. They pulled the contract. This went on, I think, 4 or 5 separate times. We eventually closed on that property a year and a half later, and the purchase price for the bank was $15,000 less than what it had originally been. But we closed, but it took us a year and a half. Like, it was a lot of headaches and jumping through hoops for that particular property. I've had properties where a client waited. Another problem is that you'll ask for a repair request. Generally speaking, that is as is. There's been a handful of situations where I've gotten a bank to make repairs, but usually we make the request and they say no.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one where the bank just didn't get back to us, and they were waiting and waiting and waiting, and then 2 days before closing, they said, we're not doing anything. It was a requirement of the buyer's mortgage, so we had to figure out how to get the mortgage company to fund the property with a bad roof is what the problem was. So we ended up getting the bank to agree to a 30-day after closing time period to fix the roof.
Like an escrow?
Yeah, we held an escrow. The bank held the escrow. The mortgage company held the escrow. And required that it be repaired in order to move forward. But it was very stressful, and my clients were like, they can't sell it to anyone like this. Doesn't matter. They don't care. They'll sell it to somebody. They don't care who they sell it to. It's a business transaction for these banks. So it's not emotional, and it doesn't even always make financial sense, like I said about the last transaction. You just do what they want.
Right.
And no rhyme or reason. So
I say, it depends on what cup of coffee the person had in the morning or something. we had a situation where a person went in and they bid against another one, and the bank came back and only went $100 off its asking price. And then 2 months later or so, they came back and offered less than the offer price, but it was too late. It was like, you must have had a great morning.
I had one a year ago. It ended up dying in the attorney review period. My clients did their inspections on the front end, which isn't a bad idea with those properties. But they did their inspections on the front end and decided it was more than they could fathom. I think the purchase price, would say it was $700,000 at the time. That house just now sold for $500,000. We requested a $40,000 concession, and the bank said no. But then they took $200,000 off the purchase price. I mean, like I said, it doesn't even make financial sense.
Mm.
The other thing is, like I said, these transactions are really as is, so they're not going to generally make repairs. The time frames are set in stone. They actually say it's 10 days from the signing of the contract, not from the conclusion of attorney review, so those inspections have to be set up right away. On bank-owned properties, usually the properties are winterized. In some instances, the contract will say they have to dewinterize it, and inspections will take place after dewinterization. In a lot of them, it's not in there. So if you don't write it in before the offer, we can't change it.
Yeah.
So the banks also require that the certificate of occupancy is obtained by the buyer, not the seller. In many cases, that's just a smoke certification. Not all situations. Sometimes it's a full CO inspection, which could be very costly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen where they try to slip in a clause that says, like, if you do accept this offer, then not only if you don't close, you're going to get charged $100, $150 a day, but then also that if something comes back, you're agreeing before you even have the inspections to increase the amount of your mortgage to offset the costs, and they won't even move forward without that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So that's why so as properties, I think that it's best to do the inspections before time if you can.
And I don't know. I'm just curious. This is just a question because I get it all the time, and I've been thinking about it for years. It drives me crazy. But it's like when a seller has a home and a buyer comes in and does the inspections, and the seller, which you were talking about yesterday, please go ahead with this because I remember what you were talking about and revising it as it goes. Because I was going to say I wish we had a kind of like an Amazon club where you could buy the other person's inspection at a discount or something. You know what I mean? It's owned by the buyer, but they still don't give it away.
Yeah. As is transaction language it's so funny because as is only means as is if you're going to push as is. So it basically, it says that it's as a subject to your home inspection. You do the home inspection, and then things come back, and they ask for repairs. But you, as the seller, have to determine whether you're going to give them anything, whether you're going to dig your heels in. And you have to understand that if you dig your heels in, you might lose the transaction. And there are certain things that, logically, pretty much any buyer is going to ask for. If your roof is leaking, they're going to want the roof fixed. I mean, if you have mold in your house, they're going to want that radon, termites. And these are things that are going to be required no matter who you sell the house to. So in those situations, we tend to say, hey, look, just take care of it. As a seller, if I was the one telling the seller what to do before they listed the house, I would tell them, pay the $500, $600, and do a home inspection so you know what's going to come back.
Right, right.
And get ahead of it. Because
yeah. Well, because they'll have to do it. They need to know about it. Be prepared. It might come out clean, and then they can actually be a little bit more calm about it. And, I mean, it does make all sense. I totally agree with you.
And if you do that, you have the home inspection, and you have the opportunity to give it to someone when they're signing the contract and say, look, I'm not going to take care of any of this stuff. So if you buy it and any of these things come up, I'm not dealing with it.
Just save yourself a couple $100, and you can read what was just signed here that I bought.
Exactly.
I like when you were talking yesterday about the seller's disclosure and updating it every time something changes too, because I think that's just, again, the bank-owned properties, they don't even have to fill out a disclosure. It's like, they get away with everything, by the way. That makes me crazy. But there's still a benefit too in certain parts. But when it comes to the seller disclosure, what you were talking about yesterday.
So if you do a home inspection and, for example, the roof comes back with a leak and you fix it, you should update, if the deal falls through anyway, you should update your seller's disclosure to say, we were told that there was a roof leak, here, we fixed it. Or if you're not going to fix something, you should still update, because it's a misrepresentation if you don't. The best thing I can tell you is disclose, because it's going to cover you from liability later. The only thing that a buyer is able to come after you for after closing is, based on the way we draw up the contracts, is purposeful misrepresentation. So if you knew something and you didn't tell them, even if their inspector didn't find it, you're on the hook. So it's just not worth it. It's not worth the potential liability.
Do you know of anything that a seller can not have to disclose? I always wonder about when someone dies, gets killed or something like that.
Murder is definitely one of those things that does come up. You have to disclose that. Natural causes, you don't have to disclose. And there was recently a case, and I don't remember exactly where it was, where there was like a haunting or like someone was harassing, and they had to disclose that too. And the court found that that was something.
Ah, that's interesting.
It was a big deal. I want to say it was in like Westfield or something. It was a very expensive case.
That's so interesting. I love having an attorney on the radio here, Talented People. Her name again is Melissa Payer Makowitz, and she is Flemington here, a real estate attorney. If you're looking for one, easy to get in touch with. The reason I even bring that up is because it's so weird showing houses and looking at some of the conditions of some of the bank-owned properties or some of the ones that just stripped down. Absolutely everything is gone. There's no copper pipes. There's like nothing left. And yet there's this big mess of something on the carpet in the bedroom. And it's like, I always just like wonder, I'm like, what do they have to say about what that is?
I had a short sale that I was working on several years ago. And the day before closing, the house was broken into. All of the copper pipes were ripped out of the house. People defecated all over the floor. It was just the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And that transaction obviously didn't go forward. But I just remember getting the email at 10 o'clock at night from my client.
Heart
sunk, because it had been negotiated for, it had to have been like 7 to 8 months that we spent on it. And then the day before closing.
Oh my God.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
I had said to my boss in the real estate office one day that, you know, every time I go into a bank-owned property, sometimes I'll see things like on the wall, or you see like the swing set or something outside that's really emotional again that they had to leave. And it was interesting that, you know, there for all those people that have been really displaced, there's a lot of people out there who took advantage of it too, took everything when they left and just wrote a big FU on top of the wall. And that was terrible because, I mean, there's like no sink.
Unfortunately, the way that the lending practices were in the early couldn't do it. They couldn't afford the homes. They just couldn't. And that caused such a turn in the lending industry way to the other direction, where they really make you now jump through every hoop known to man.
Yeah. That must be really interesting for you. Yeah. To see the change in that, because that is seriously, it's all about the mortgage commitment at the end of the day, right? Unless it's cash.
It's crazy with the way that they do the lending now. I mean, you'll have a mortgage company ask you for the same document 15 times. And my clients are always so aggravated. And I try to prepare my buyers for that up front. I'm like, look, they're going to ask you for it. What I did when I bought my house, because I was very well aware of the process, I created a PDF of every document that they were going to need, and I did an index for it like a crazy person. And I sent it over to the mortgage rep. And every time they asked me for one of the documents, I'd say, I sent this to you on such and such date at such and such time, but here it is again for your ease of reference. Please see page 2 or 4 or whatever. And it just made me laugh the number of times that, and they'd be like, oh, sorry.
Oh yeah, it seems a little bit like they're trying. If it's the same thing as like in, I want to say manufacturing or something, where there's a salesperson out there and then there's the fulfillment. So it's like the sales mortgage person's trying to get anybody anywhere to just get the mortgage business, but then when it comes to the underwriting, they're like complete odds with it. And then they're, you know, I see a little bit of them trying to be a little bit nicer because it's so competitive. But back, I remember how hard, I mean, it took really good person with a really great credit score 4 years to get a commitment on a mortgage back in 2010 or something, because it was like breaks on backup. And then that just, it's just the ripple effect to the whole entire thing is crazy.
We had, with trying to get the mortgage process underway, especially if you're dealing with a really big bank, they end up handing off the file to 30, 40 people in the back end, and they make sure they're in compliance with everything. So person A will look at it and then hand it off to B, C down the line. And each person, if they miss something as they're going through the process, they'll say, we need this document, we need that document. And it could be in there, but they're going to ask for it anyway because they didn't see it. So it gets very complicated and very frustrating.
How long does a typical closing happen for you?
That's the majority of them are 45 days, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the lender's real good, we can do it in 45 days.
When you're talking to someone who comes, your way that's under contract and you want to differentiate yourself and talk about your services, what do you say to them?
Well, for our, I call them our heroes. We have a heroes discount. So that's for police, fire.
Oh, that's nice.
We do EMS and military. So we take that pretty seriously. My husband's a police officer. My brother's in the military. And that's...
Oh.
It comes to heart. So
nice.
We do offer a discount to those individuals. We also have a office cell phone number devoted directly to real estate, so that if someone wants to send a text message, they can text message instead of picking up the phone. We operate really in a technological way. I answer emails all hours of the night. My clients could probably tell you that. I'm not good at sleeping, but I am good at responding. So.
That's great. Okay, we're going to go to our last break here. It's already 3:40. I just want to give you a couple updates on the commercials again. I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is Talented People, and I'm with my guest, Melissa Payer-Makowitz from Flemington, New Jersey, serving the real estate buyers and sellers. If you're interested, get in touch, and we'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113. Or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, we're back here on Talented People. Hope you're having a great day. I'm Jeannie Murphy, and my guest again is Melissa Payer Makowitz.
And very good.
I'm doing great. Huh? That's great. No. She's great. As you can hear, she's an expert real estate attorney. Yesterday, she was talking to the Weikert sales team in the Flemington office, and I couldn't help but ask her to be on the show because I wanted her to share some of the information that she shared with us yesterday, which she's doing. So you were going to talk a little bit about Zillow and Trulia and some of your observations on.
So I think that Zillow, Trulia, I think that has caused a lot of buyers to kind of search around that way, and a lot of the information that they find is not really accurate in that some of the things aren't for sale anymore. Some of them are under contract. So I talked to a lot of my agent friends, and they're like, oh, I got another one for my client who's like thinking I'm not checking MLS because, you know, I didn't see this, but it's already under contract. So they're barking up the wrong tree. So a lot of times it could just be a waste of time.
Yeah.
For the buyers. But also the values that they put on there. I can give you an example. My parents' house, if you look on Zillow for my parents' house, Zillow says my parents' house is worth like $345,000, and it's appraised at over $1 million. So, I mean, they can be way off.
Yeah.
Way off. Especially if it's based on when they purchased the property. I mean, if my parents have owned the house for over 30 years, so.
Yeah, they don't come in the house like a normal appraiser would. They just basically take the estimate of the area, whatever's closed, think about similar, and they don't have any idea.
And tax records. They really rely on tax records an awful lot, and they might not be correct, so.
Oh, yeah. I was just talking to someone this morning who was talking about that, and the reason that the tax records were so off is because half the property was subdivided and sold off, so it was completely wrong.
Well, also, like when you go for permits and stuff, there's a lot of towns that had issues with their permit and record keeping, so. There's two towns in particular I can think of in Somerset County that had fires. And so there's no records before 1991 in either one of those towns. So my clients will go down to do an OPRA, and they'll say, oh, well, we don't have any records on this property. So the way that my clients interpret it is that, you know, someone was doing something shady, and they did all of this work without getting permits. And, in fact, they leave out the part that they had a fire and everything burned down, which, you know, is actually the truth. So, but getting back to the Zillow and Trulia stuff, I mean, you could just get complete, like, the evaluations of them are just completely off.
And also, on behalf of the sellers, including myself, like, I just refinanced my mortgage. The first thing that the bank said to me is, you have absolutely not got the same as a Zillow estimate. They were like, we never look at Zillow in any way, shape, or form because it's completely off. Sometimes people think their house is worth much more than it is because of a Zillow inaccurate estimate, too.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
It goes either direction.
Yeah.
You never know which way it's going to go.
Right, so right, right.
It's just not reliable.
Well, that's the thing about a realtor and, you know, going to an attorney is the protection that you have. Like yesterday, what you're talking about with the seller disclosure forms, when it gets to for sale by owners, talk a little bit about that.
So for sale by owners are interesting because they don't want to pay a realtor. And I think that statistically, when you list a house as a realtor, you get significantly more than the 6% increase or 5% increase, whatever it is that the realtor is charging. So you'll get a lot more money, a lot more bang for your buck, because they know how to value the house better. The other thing is that for sale by owners, you know, we end up having to write up, the insurers have to do a lot more work. We have to write up the contracts.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you charge buyers that are doing for sale by owners a higher price generally?
I probably should, but I don't.
Yeah, I think you should, even though I know...
It's a lot more work.
Oh, it's all the work that the real estate agent does. That goes back to you. And it's actually got to be really difficult because you are in a position where you're trying to talk to someone who doesn't want to pay a real estate agent for their services, but you're still there and you have to be there and protect that buyer. And then mediating that relationship, because that's what happens a little bit before you get there, you have to take on all that responsibility.
The job of the inspector is to tear that part of house, that house apart, to let you know that there's this problem. They're covering their own butt, so they put every cracked tile, everything in there. So when the buyers get the inspection report, they freak out. They're like, "Oh my gosh, the house is falling apart." It may not be falling apart. It might be minor stuff, but the realtor is going to be able to say, you know, that's really a problem. Like the structure of the house really is damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, no, it's just a cracked tile, or you know what I mean. Like the floor is crooked, or it's you know not an issue at all. I mean, and I don't know because I've never seen it.
Right.
And the pictures. I mean, I had one recently where they were like, "There's mold in the house," and it turned out it was just dirt. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't mold at all, but they wanted potential mold. It's potential mold. Well, anything's potential mold. Like, it could be, it couldn't be. That would be like saying there's potential termites or there's potential. Before you have it tested, you have no idea, so.
It's so interesting to me. I picture it as, so a person is looking for a home. They go on to the platforms that are available, like, and if they are working with an agent, we have them on automatic updates. Like you were explaining about how one of your realtors had mentioned that one of her buyers had gotten information on a property that wasn't even for sale anymore because it was all about the tax records, blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden the for sale by owner pops up. So then they're like, oh, now what do I do? Okay. The real estate agent, whatever happens to us happens. But then I say to the buyers, I say, be aware, because you're working with a person who probably doesn't have a seller's disclosure form, probably doesn't even realize they need one or should have one, or tell us about that. They walk in blind too.
Often what I end up doing is if I have a for sale by owner, I provide a seller's disclosure to the seller for them to sign. So if I'm representing the buyer, I ask the seller to fill out a seller's disclosure.
You have got to get in touch with her. That's so great that she's talking about yesterday. I was like so glad to have someone so thorough.
I generally get a lot of pushback on it, but it is what it is. I mean, my job is to protect my client.
Right.
Whichever side of it I'm on, I got to protect my client. So
yeah. And on the buyer's side, if you were representing the buyer, that document is invaluable because, again, like you said, you're not going over to the property and they can say anything they want, and the buyers are going to be afraid without an agent not to sell real estate agents, which I just happen to be one. But point being, they're going in and they're talking to someone that's selling their house. They want to buy the house. It all looks good. But then when it gets to you guys, it starts to unravel.
I mean, not to say that something's not going to be missed, but at least you have all of that information. So you can compare the items. You can decide whether, you know, the permits were obtained for the water heater. The number of sellers who don't get permits for water heaters blows your mind. They go to Home Depot and they get one and they install it and they call it a day. But it's required to have a permit. So
yeah.
You just don't know.
What about you? Like, do you usually say first on the buyer's side? Because I understand the seller's side, they get an offer, they come to you. It's like, here's my offer. But on the buyer's side, if they don't have an agent, do they come to you to write up the contract from the beginning to the end? Or do they actually write it up themselves and bring it to you to review and then start?
They ask me to write up the contract.
Thank God.
Yeah,
that's good. That's why you should be charging more for that, because it is very legitimate. I mean, that's a lot of work. It's so much work. And especially if it doesn't get accepted, because that's what we do. You know what I mean? Again,
what they usually do, they'll do sort of a letter of intent. They work out the details with the seller. The seller's going to accept it, and then they would come to me to draft the contract after it's been kind of worked out the details.
Thank God.
And then we ask all the other important questions that they don't know to ask.
Absolutely. So what else? Anything trend-wise, or what are you looking at for the future for yourself and your business and in real estate?
I just opened the office in Flemington here, which is very exciting stuff. I brought on another attorney who does real estate, who I worked with in the past, Monica Yates, and so we're pretty excited about that, and we're just growing. We'll see where the road takes us, so it's fun.
It is fun. It's very exciting, and she's also, you're in the building behind the Lee Roth right on Main Street. What's the address?
91 Main Street.
91, okay. So what about trends that you see?
Septic systems are failing. Very important to know in Hunterdon County, septic systems are failing.
Talk a little bit about that. I want, if you don't mind, because I know we talked yesterday about even the newer ones. Talk about the newer and the older ones, because we have both in this, you know.
In this area. So yeah. Septic systems, in New Jersey as a whole, the water table has changed, which has caused a lot of the septic systems to fail. When the water table, because when they install a septic system, it's supposed to be sort of above the water grade so that the water doesn't wash out the system, the effluents in the system. So they are starting to build a lot of mound systems so it's above the water table because the water table has gone up so much. A lot of the septic systems that were in there failed because of the water table. There's also some that failed because of baffles or whatever in the older systems. The newer systems, I still recommend to clients to do inspections on them, because I can't tell you the number of times where it was a brand new system and it just wasn't installed properly. Like, they didn't connect up the pipe or the system settled and the septic system fails. And if the septic system fails, you end up with the stuff that you flush down the toilet in your kitchen sink. And
yeah.
That's just not somewhere you want to be.
so awful. And it's so expensive.
So expensive.
And it's the seller's responsibility to fix, correct?
Correct. But until after closing, so if you buy it and don't do the inspection, guess what, buyer, that's your problem.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. There's no, it's buyer beware at that point.
What about underground oil tanks?
Underground oil tanks, you should always do a scan for oil tanks. If there's any reason to believe that there's an underground oil tank, do it. It's a couple $100 and it'll save you a lot of headaches. Oil tanks, if they leak, are a huge problem. I've seen contamination upwards of $100,000. Insurance companies don't cover it, and most insurance companies, or quite a few insurance companies, I should say, will not even insure a house that has an underground oil tank. So we end up getting a lot of people who say, okay, well, it was properly decommissioned. So I can tell you properly decommissioned in 2005 does not meet standards to what they were now.
Oh, that's interesting.
In a lot of instances, they didn't do soil testing, and there could be contamination and you wouldn't know about it. Even in instances where they did soil testing, sometimes they didn't do soil testing. They usually wouldn't do soil testing underneath the tank. So if your car is leaking oil, where's the oil going to be? It's going to be underneath the car. So unless you move the car, you're not going to see it, and that's where we run into problems.
What about in the basement oil tanks?
Those don't generally have problems. Every once in a while, people will have insurance policies on them through the oil company. You can also have insurance policies on the underground oil tanks through the oil companies, which is definitely recommended if that's the way you're going to go. But you can at least, the basement oil tanks, you can evaluate them. You can see what you're getting. And if they leak, they're leaking, probably slowly you're going to catch it, and it's on your cement, as opposed to something that's either in the backyard, above ground, or underground.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about why you moved one of your offices into Flemington.
So I live in Hunterdon County. I moved out here in 2013, and I absolutely love it. I noticed that I worked with a lot of agents in Hunterdon County from when I was in Branchburg, because it's kind of borderline there. Unfortunately, I was starting to lose some of that business because people didn't want to go to Somerset County. And Bound Brook is far in Somerset County. So I thought it would be apropos to kind of bring a office out this way so I can be closer to home. I have three kids. And
oh, that's nice. How old are they?
My oldest son is 7. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, how sweet. 2 boys and a girl. Good for you. Well, welcome to Hunterdon County.
Well, thank you very much.
And on behalf of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, again, we wish you all the best. If you're out there and you're looking to have a real estate transaction attorney, then you've got her right here on Main Street. Her name is, again, Melissa Payer Makowitz.
Good job.
All right, I'm Jeannie Murphy. Have a great day and a wonderful Easter. Take care.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The Trump administration is taking more measures to crack down on the political regimes in Cuba and Venezuela, announcing new sanctions as well as announcing a new policy that allows lawsuits against foreign entities that are operating on properties that were seized during the Cuban Revolution. National Security Advisor John Bolton outlines the new policies that are intended to hurt the Three Stooges of socialism, as he calls it.
As the president said in February, the twilight hour of socialism has arrived in our hemisphere. The troika of tyranny, Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, is beginning to crumble.
Federal law enforcement on Wednesday is announcing charges of 60 people across multiple states in connection with the opioid crisis, including 31 doctors, 7 pharmacists, and 8 nurse practitioners accused of illegally prescribing and distributing opioids and other narcotics. This is USA Radio News.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities, or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Available on Amazon.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Mostly sunny and highs in the 60s on Sunday. Mostly sunny, warmer and highs in the lower 70s on Monday. And we're in the mid-70s and mostly sunny on Tuesday the 11th. Temperatures in our area, 40 in Quakertown, 41 over in Raritan, 42 in Branchburg, 42 in Lebanon, 40 in Kingswood, and 40 in Frenchtown. Good morning, Hunter. Hunter Chamber Radio weather.
20 to 40 pounds in 40 days guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost resonant frequency technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and Hunter.com. Cold weather, damp. First thing I think of is soup, and I got the man who's going to tell us all about it. His name's Mark Barber, and he's going to bring us soup in Flemington. So I want to welcome Mark in. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, I'm very, very appreciative of having you here. I learned about the your franchise coming in the area. From the you joined the chamber recently, and I saw that you were a new chamber member, and so we reached out to you to find out what's all about. So let's find out what is ZOOP. I love the name, by the way. It's pretty cool.
ZOOP is the leading fast casual soup concept restaurant that's defining a category with its own premium and proprietary soups and other recipes. It was started by a gentleman named Eric Ursher, who got a law degree back in the 90s, practiced, as he said, practiced law for about 8 minutes before he realized he didn't like it. Hated
That's
it.
A lot of work to figure out you don't